music they love, a blend of bluegrass, folk, old-time, and acoustic country. Robin and Linda sang Americana before it was cool. The show is Friday, March 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland, Oregon. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO. Up next on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews installation artist Yoon-Hee Choi about her installation Wythe, on now at Front House Gallery.
Andy Wawo looks a scream, had him on my woe. Andy Wawo, silver stream, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Galavan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Yoon-Hee Choi. She is a sculptor and installation artist, and her piece, With, is on now at Front of House Gallery at 112 Southwest 1st Street. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Yoon-Hee.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you are known, I've known you as the artist at Blackfish, but you've got this space in, what's the name of the architecture company?
Jessica Helgerson Interior Design.
Mm-hmm. So it's this space where you think you're going to someone's office, but the front of house, uh-huh. as soon as you come in the door, is an art gallery. And they always have something.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you have taken this space and reacted to the space and made there's a sculpture in the middle of the floor, and then there's one in the corner, and then you've taken over a whole wall, one of the brick walls.
Right.
So With is all about, you've used handmade paper in different colors.
Right.
Just tell us, how did you respond to the space? Because what you did was you made these colored squares and rectangles out of paper, and you also made big sheets of white paper that are patterned like the brick.
Right.
And then you sort of took over. Let's talk about the one wall that you kind of took over.
Sure. The front of gallery is located inside of a very old brick building built in 1880s, a historic district, I think.
Yeah.
So when you enter, you see the really tall and really big exposed brick wall there. So when I saw that, I was really drawn into it. It's a rich texture, and you can see the painted paints, and so I was really drawn into it. So I really wanted to celebrate the old, over 100 years brick wall. So, but when you're in the gallery space, there's a white wall kind of in between you and brick wall.
So they kind of painted the lower two-thirds of this brick wall to make it like a gallery.
Yeah, they built the white gypsum board wall.
Oh, yeah. Okay. They just covered it up.
Yeah. But you can see the rest of the brick wall there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I wanted, I want to bring the brick wall in front of the wall so viewer can pay attention to the brick wall. So when you enter the gallery on the south wall, I use the pulp paper to bring the texture and pattern of the wall. So there are many more, I did a planal composition. So at the very back, there's all the brick, and then there's a white wall. And then I made a 60 by 80 size recycled cotton paper and bring the texture and pattern of the wall. And then I cast a color, rectangular color paper and pin on in front of it, the floating in a very different depth. So that casts another layer of the shadow on
mm-hmm.
it.
So you're getting the shadows from that big window that looks out on
right,
on
the extra
first.
Light is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I did, I brought a wet paper pulp, and then I climbed up the letters and then cast it straight on the brick wall. So there are many layers, you know, pushing and pull. So it's a more planal composition on the right to celebrate the texture.
So these two pieces of big white handmade paper that are patterned like the brick, what's the significance of this kind of pulp?
I use all recycled material. So that one actually comes from my old futon that I recycled to make a cotton paper. So actually that color, it's off-white, it comes from that.
Is that the stuffing of the futon or the cloth cover?
Stuff. Yeah.
Tell us about this futon.
That's actually in Korea traditionally, when daughter married, mom gave us a wedding gift, a set of a futon and a blanket. So I got that as a gift from my mom like a long time ago, but I was about to get rid of it, but there was just so much attachment to it, so I couldn't get rid of it. And then I became a citizen a couple of years ago, so I made a more like my own proposal to using that the material as more like my own personal ritual, giving up my Korean citizenship.
Did you have to give up Korean?
Yes, I had to. Yeah.
So when I became an American citizen in 2008, they let me keep my British passport. So they don't do that for Koreans?
No, unfortunately, yeah. Oh, so okay. It was a kind of very personal.
It was a big wrench, really, like leaving behind.
You know? Yeah, even though I lived in America for a long time, you know, giving up, it was a little more emotional than I thought. So this was a right mature that I taking apart with a huge burden, you know, the physically taking up a lot of my space, and then I didn't know what to do. But making that so I'm not really getting rid of it, but kind of a transform that I can appreciate in a different way. So I kind of a carry on. So that's what's the cotton from.
So you made this paper, and are you a amateur paper maker, or do you take it to a professional place like?
Luckily, I had the paper making residency last year through C3 initiative. So that was the proposal that I want to recycle this my cotton.
Okay.
So
where was this?
C3 initiative. That's a nonprofit art
organization. Portland?
Yes.
Okay.
And they offer paper making residency. So I work through the pulp and deco. That's the paper making studios. Mm-hmm. I work with a paper artist instructor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who was that?
Jen Woodward.
Jen, of course. Everybody cites Jen when it comes to paper. Oh yeah, people sent her palm fronds from Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, she was.
Turn into paper. So you made this paper, but the idea was to imprint the wall, the brick, and then tell us about the little colored rectangles. They're pink, light blue, yellow, kind of plum. What is that shape? It's brick, but what?
Actually, all the rectangular size block, it comes from the single unit brick itself. So the rectangle size comes from the end of the brick, you know, the smaller size. And the block that I cast is a half of a actual brick size. That the size, it comes from the brick wall, basically.
So these little floating, these things are like pinned up like butterflies, you know, like samples, and they're rectangles, but they're the shape of the end of the brick, one that sticks out.
And also that all the line is actually lined up with the actual common bond pattern on the brick itself.
So what is it about brick that they have to put one lengthways every now and then again?
The common bond is in this building, every seventh row, it rotates the brick a right angle degree, then it kind of locks in different ways, so it has more strength and lock the, and then you can keep going the higher.
Mm-hmm.
So every seventh row, you see the end of a brick. Yeah. So this, I picked that rose, and then I add a color on there so that all color rectangles in every seventh row.
Oh, okay. So you're picking.
It's not really random. Yeah.
But it's not comprehensive. You're not picking every single one.
Right. That's my.
These are like pixels that have some are missing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's it creates the pattern too, but also it locks it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then the second piece is a steel frame that's full of these blocks made of paper, and mm-hmm. they're colored. They kind of look like those very dry sponges you buy at IKEA, where you drop them in water and they pop up. They're like tight. They're kind of layered. They're very, you know, they're not perfect rectangles. They mm-hmm. have bulges and bends and things in them. But they're stacked up in a nice grid. Why did you pick that quantity?
Quantity. you know, it's a half size of the standard brick. When you imagine, you know, how like three-dimensionally how brick wall, you know, especially works, and especially when you see the end piece, and then when the 90-degree turns, you know, every seventh row, I imagine that I can pull that end piece like playing Jenga. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you pull it halfway, you still halfway in and halfway off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of took that halfway off as my basic unit to make my own brick. So I made a mold, and then I cast it. And first time when I casted it, it was a surprise. I was in panic because I imagined it would be very rectangle, right angle edge, but because the water evaporated really, and the whole volume shrunk, and then it almost lost 20% of volume, so mm-hmm. it became a very organic shape that I didn't expect it. So next one, I did it really well, pack a lot, and then squeeze out all the moisture, and then I keep that in the mold for 2 weeks, and I got the perfect one, but I didn't like it. I hated the perfect one. So looking at those two, I made a decision which way I want to go, but I like the organic shape better, so I kept the mold, you know, basic structure, but I more like a play with the water and also the weather change over season, you know, so in the studio, how much is humidity is there, it all was kind of organic way developed. So I just accept what it is. So I thought about imperfect and perfect thing. Then I was more drawn into imperfection, you know, because I thought about a lot Korean architecture, traditional architecture. The perfect imperfect is when you compare a thing. But in Korea, usually you find a stone and make a base for the column. And usually, you know, you can pick, you know, curved wood and use a column. So just work with it, what is it found. So mm-hmm. for me, this one, I can control, but that was not my intention. Even though it comes from same mold, everything is slightly different. So I thought there was a rejection, but basically I used every brick, block that I casted. So there's a play, you know, compromising each other, and I like that, how it worked.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Yoon-hee Shui. Her piece, With, is on now at Front of House Gallery at 112 Southwest 1st Street, downtown Portland, through April the 10th. Yoon-hee, this piece where you've made kind of blocks, mm-hmm. like bricks, but out of paper, what did you use the same pulp? Was it the futon stuff?
Well, actually, you know, I have a limited amount of cotton that I, you know, recycle from my futon, so I didn't know how much I, you know, really need a pulp, you know, paper pulp. So I called letterpress stores, and so I collect a very good high cotton paper scrap from them. So most of the brick blocks is cast out of that recycled cotton paper.
Mm-hmm.
So straight from the
futon. And how did you color them?
Well, there is a paper pigments to dye the color. I mean, paper pulp. So
were the blocks neutral, and then you color them afterwards, or did you
do it? No, actually, I made a 5 gallon color pulp, each color at the very beginning. So, I actually it's all one color comes from same batch.
So you've got this light blue. It's very much like those sponges. I keep coming back to this. These scrubby ones now, the normal ones you buy. How did the color change as it dried?
Well, actually, I work with Jen, the paper instructor. We tested it. So when you make a wet pulp, usually in the water, it's darker. So we get a sample and dry it. And then, so you can see when it's dry what is going to be true color. So we decide, we checked every color. Then we, set the color. And then once the color dye sucked into the pulp, you cannot really change. So before you do that, you test the color.
Sounds like you were kind of deciding how much control to have over this process. You do a lot of testing, but you also are open to chance.
Right. So actually, to me, I think that's the balance in a way that I'm very picky about certain things, but something is I just take it as a given. So the color, okay, I know yellow, blue, red, white, and black. Then I made it, and then, so I made blocks first, and then I basically that I arranged, to make a color place, So after that, I added some color blocks. I need a purple color and things like that. But I work with what's given. I think that's what I'm used to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this pattern, this grid of colors, is there any significance? Is it spell out a secret code, or did you arrange them in how long did it take to arrange the colors in this pattern?
Well, if you ask that, there's a little thing I embedded it in here. Actually, I don't think I'm a color person, but I had to think about color when I made a pulp painting first time through my old residency. Because of my proposal, I thought about a lot of Korean traditions, that there was a 5-color cardinal traditional color. So north, south, east, west thing, but in Korean traditional colors, there's a center. So in here, there's black, blue, white, red, and center in the yellow. So it's kind of carry its own center in the piece. And there is a other Korean color idea is a saekdong. It's more like you work with a scrap of a color fabric, but it's more like arrange them for the harmony or like a balance of the chi energy. So in here, I already had a given color that I had. It's already made made in blocks, and then I arranged them to play. And so the only 5 block was had a position already. I decided where it goes. But other one, I just play.
Just manually, or was this on a computer?
Oh, manually.
Oh, okay. So you had the blocks done.
Yeah.
And you just arrange them with your hand, like you're playing Tetris or...
Yeah, exactly. So that's a fun part.
Yeah. And then in the corner, there's a little thing. It's like a little steel bracket, black, and it's grabbing a bunch of very thin versions of these colored pieces of paper. Yeah, it's like a big sandwich, basically. What is this thing here?
As I said, I mentioned, I always drawn into little force, like the Jenga. When I said, it's a holding some part and then trying to get out of that tension. So when I stacked them, I made it always a store in a stack, you know, the color. I really love that intensity when it's a very small offset. And I really like, it's made out of a cotton. It has a really little bit of a squishy kind of feeling, very soft. And then I really like, you know, metal piece is really pressing down, but I really stack them high. So it's almost like when I got out of that tension.
Oh, there's a little bit of bulge as they come out? Because they're only clamped in like halfway. Right?
Yeah, so there is no glue. Basically, if you take it out, it will be all fall apart as a single pieces. So I kind of, you know, like holding that. So I made that little piece and really defined that corner.
And is this corner of the room significant? It's the one closest to where all the office workers are.
I see this as a... this work in many different ways. You know, I call that a diptych. So on the right side is more like a south wall, it's more like a plain old change that could deal with the whole site and then surface. But on the left side is a four elements, a three-dimensional work. So this corner piece actually connects, you know, diagonally with the centerpiece in the wall, you know, one, the standing one, and really define the depth to the very corner. And also that corner turns, then that one, and then other piece on that north wall, it defines the surface of that wall.
Mm-hmm.
So if you imagine this as more like one big volume, kind of touching every side. So that corner really connects to define that lower wall, end of the wall. Honestly, you know, on the south wall, there's one piece turns toward the brick wall, and I really tried to turn the corner white wall, but I couldn't connect it. Mm-hmm. So in a way, this one is a lot, you know, really locks that two piece together three-dimensionally.
Mm-hmm.
It borrows a all void space, so that was important to me.
This is the kind of work where you go in, and if you don't think about it too much, mm-hmm. you're not gonna get that much out of it. If you just spend 5 minutes and leave, you're going to think like, colored squares, all right, goodbye. But you, trained as an architect and city planner, you've like working on the whole space and mm-hmm. trying to pull it all together and make it into a,
mm-hmm.
the space you inherited is already a thing. Have you done this anywhere else?
You know, I'm doing installation in different situation. You know, mm-hmm. Installation happened in a white wall gallery. I feel comfortable bring my own idea and install. But when the site is very rich, I realize I cannot ignore what's already there. So I take it as more like a given condition. So again, you know, I feel like it's found it. You know, I found it. So I take it as more like a architecture design. So you do first time go site visit, and you're really trying to observe or find the uniqueness of a site, you know, using all your senses. It's so history, whatever, or like a site condition, slope or wind or sun or rain. To me, if it's, I don't want to impose my idea onto the site. So this front of a house has that kind of a condition, and previously I did a Portland building installation.
Oh yeah, in the lobby of the Portland building.
Yeah, before.
You had one of them.
My idea really started almost intuitively, and then I developed. So that case, I went in from info session, and then I asked what's the wall condition. Then he said the rack person said, oh, there are the layers of paints, wall paints behind the surface from the previous artist. So I decided to bring that layers of paint. So I carved the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of brings the hidden kind of a history. So
mm-hmm.
That's the one thing I did very site specific, yeah.
So an installation of yours at Blackfish, and it was a one piece.
Uh-huh.
Was magic marker tops
uh-huh.
melted together into a sort of big, not really a circle, maybe a heart, or yeah. you know, like an odd shape.
Yeah.
that was to do with like recycling, right? You were working with kids.
Yeah.
This is, it was kind of conceptual.
Well, actually, that's kind of developed from my installation with the plastic caps. But I have two kids, and I work a lot with the, you know, magic markers, and I definitely aware of the plastic, you know, environmental issues, and I start to collect them. So actually, that's I collect all the magic marker caps from my kids' school. So, and then I realize it's important kids know, you know, what they use for art making can be harmful for environmental, so I want them to be responsible. So what I did for that specific piece that I showed at Blackfish was I worked with one of my neighborhood kids and offered a new marker set, and then she used, when she used all that, then bring back to me, and then I talk about how we can recycle them, and then I showed her that can be used to make art. So I kind of want them aware of what they're doing. So that's kind of an ongoing project that I keep working with. And mm-hmm.
What's it called?
That piece was Juho.
Juho, okay. Yeah. So we could maybe see some more of that in the future.
Yeah, eventually if I have a chance, I like to work with a little more community, you know, a group of kids that I can find, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then this piece that's up in front of house, can you kind of develop it further? Will you take it down? Will you recycle it or what?
I may not recycle, but I really like, I'm excited about, this is the first time I weld it. So I really like the material contrast, between light pulp. Pulp is a very versatile material. It can be three-dimensional, very solid, but also very thin and delicate. So I like that contrast. So I really want to explore more.
So you might do more paper and welding?
Yeah, probably. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Installation work?
If I have a chance, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I hope you do. My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Yoon-hee Shui. She is showing With, which is an installation at Front of House Gallery at 112 Southwest 1st Street, downtown. And it runs through April the 10th. And the hours are 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, because it is a working office. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO, Yoon-hee.
Thank you very much.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, and him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Hello, I'm Bob Madar. Join me for episode 5 of the 3rd season of Local Folks Podcast and meet Rick, the manager of Project Action at the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center. Rick was formerly homeless and now devotes his time to helping local folks who are homeless change their lives and find employment and housing. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folk.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet on Tuesday, February 25th at 6 p.m.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process. Nevada does not predict South Carolina, but Nevada sends us a signal similar to South Carolina sending a signal about Latino and African American voters and the degree to which they are rallying behind one particular candidate.
University of South Carolina professor Todd Shaw on the role of this Saturday's South Carolina primaries, but tonight's the 10th Democratic debate in Charleston. And what was once the most diverse primary debate stage has narrowed to an all-white, majority male group with just two women. All six candidates from last week's debate, plus businessman Tom Steyer. Former Vice President Joe Biden leads South Carolina polls, despite Senator Bernie Sanders pulling ahead as the national frontrunner. House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn, a key South Carolina Democrat, reportedly plans to endorse Biden tomorrow. Here's Shaw again.
We have a fairly diverse divide, if you will, between black elected leaders as to who to stand behind. And it seems as though Steyer has made some real movement in the polls. So even though 2 months ago, Joe Biden was solidly in the lead in terms of African-American support.
Tonight's debate is not only the last one before South Carolina's primaries, but also the last one before Super Tuesday, a week from today. Los Angeles alone has more people than voted in the first three states combined. California, with its 494 delegates, has around 5 million Democratic voters. Bay Area journalist Phil Traunstein says voting on Super Tuesday earlier than previous years makes a difference to some Californians.
When these tiny little states have such outsized influence, that's very frustrating to folks in California. So I think people feel good about the fact that their vote may count.
Ordained minister Dallas Conyers from South Carolina thinks the primary process in the early states is too protracted.
It does skew people and who they would vote for in the primary, because now they're not voting so much for who they think is going to be the best presidential candidate. More and more people are voting along the lines of, well, this is the person that could win and we don't want the party split.
Overall, Traunstein thinks California is more moderate than many people expect.
I think that Bernie Sanders sort of has a lock on the left liberal wing of the Democratic Party. But this is really a moderate state. And if you had one leading moderate candidate against Bernie Sanders, I think that moderate candidate would probably win.
Sanders does lead in California polls, but Senator Elizabeth Warren, Biden, former Mayor Mike Bloomberg, and Buttigieg are all fighting for that second spot, and all hoping to stall Sanders' momentum by launching sharp attacks at him. Meanwhile, President